the presentation of the flag. Color guard, attention. Color guard, advance. Color guard, about face. Scout salute. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Color guard dismissed. Scout at ease.
Shall we pray? Our Father, we give thanks unto you for the many blessings we receive. And Father, our hearts go out to those on the Gulf Coast area, the East Coast, that are suffering so much from storms and from wind and rain. And many have lost their homes and their jobs and many of their possessions. And Father, we just pray again that their needs might be met. We do pray for our young men and women who are serving in the armed forces, and both those that are at home and abroad. And Father, we pray your watch care over them and keep them safe and well. And then we pray for the council tonight as they deliberate on the many issues before the city. We thank you for their time that they have given from day to day. And now even this evening, when they could be home watching the World Series, they're here tonight. And Father, we pray that they might be blessed for their service. These things we ask in your name. Amen.
Okay, before we go any farther into the agenda, I would like to announce that the council has just returned from closed session where we discussed personnel matters and property issues, and we have no report at this time. Okay, that takes us to item number 5, special presentations, and we have 3 this evening. And one of the reasons, Toby, that I didn't call you up to talk about Boy Scouts is because you're one of the recipients tonight. So I figure you're going to get... Victoria, it's my privilege this evening to take this opportunity to present to you a mayor's commendation. And this is presented to Victoria for representing the city of Arroyo Grande at the annual League of Cities annual conference, October 5th through the 8th. And Victoria and several other of our youth from Arroyo Grande High School attended that conference for a special youth program. And Victoria, I understand you have some words that you would like to share with us this evening. Okay. Well, before you do that, I want to go ahead and make this presentation to you. And thank you so much for participating and for the benefit of your effort and the effort of others. And that's for you to take away. And the microphone is all yours.
Okay. Well, good evening, Council. Just to reintroduce myself, my name is Victoria Carranza. Recently, I was given the chance to represent Arroyo Grande and be involved in an organization called the League of California Cities. Going to San Francisco, there, where this event took place, it was fun, but I took back much knowledge concerning our community, government, as well as self-improving skills. To summarize the agenda of the League of California Cities, our governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, gave a speech dealing with Proposition 76, which was much to my interest. Then I attended a conference instructing us the correct way to public speak. This was beneficial to me personally, and I took a lot out of this. There was a Homeland Security conference given by our mayor, and I was informed about the issues our cities and states as a whole face in disaster and how they deal with them. The next day, our state controller, Stephen Wesley, spoke on terms about tax dollars. Schwarzenegger and Wesley's speeches put together were practically a debate, which I found intriguing. An informative speech by a doctor was given on obesity and problems Americans face today. There was many events taking place and a lot to learn about. I would like to thank the City Council for selecting me to represent Arroyo Grande and introducing me to the multiple community events and concerns going on. It was very rewarding, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you. You watch our kids like Victoria coming up, and you know there's hope for the future. So our second presentation this evening, if I could ask Toby, if you would come up. The stewards of our communities, nation, and world in critical times and the present and future well-being of our society requires an involved, caring citizenry with good character. And whereas more than ever, children need strong, constructive guidance from their families and their communities, including schools, youth organizations, religious institutions, and civic groups. And whereas the character of a nation is only as strong as the character of its individual citizens, and the public good benefits when young people learn that character counts in personal relationships, in school, and in the workplace. And whereas scholars and educators agree that people do not automatically develop good character, and therefore conscientious efforts must be made by youth-influencing institutions and individuals to help young people develop the essential traits and characteristics that comprise good character. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby proclaim the week of October 16 through 22, 2005, as Character Counts Week, and do hereby endorse the six pillars of character and encourage all citizens, corporate and individual, to model these traits of good character in an ongoing commitment to promote character development and ethical behavior in the youth of our community. So Juan and Toby, it's my pleasure to present it to you. And I'll turn the microphone and you over to you, both of you, and you decide.
Okay. Character is not made in a crisis. It is only exhibited. The true test of character is not how much we know how to do, but how we behave when we don't know what to do. There's a lot riding on our children's ability to understand the difference between right and wrong and to have the strength of character to make the right choices. We must teach our children to be kind, responsible, honest, and self-disciplined. These important values are first learned in the family, but all of our citizens have an obligation to support parents in the character education of our children. As Martin Luther King Jr. stated, intelligence is not enough. Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education. With this proclamation, you are affirming the importance of good character in our society and helping guide our children to understand your universal values.
I also want to thank the City Council for the recognition. When Mr. Charles first brought the concept, the Character Counts program, to me as a principal at Harlow School about 5 years ago, I wasn't really sure what he was talking about, even though I could definitely agree with all the different pillars that I could see. Over time, in our school district, the Character Counts program has surfaced more as an opportunity to see that it's not a program like a student conflict resolution program. It's really one in which embedded within daily activities are lessons in which children learn about fairness, about responsibility, about being honest. And so I want to thank the City Council and Mr. Charles for bringing the Character Counts program to Harlow School and throughout our district now as well. So thank you.
Thank you. In our final presentation this evening, if I could ask Mr. Jim Anderson to step forward. Jim, how are you this evening?
Good, how are you?
Welcome. Jim, it's my pleasure to present, again, an honorary proclamation commending the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery on its 50th year of operation. And I'll read just a few of the whereases and give you an opportunity to maybe enlighten us a little bit about the operation, if you'd choose to do so. Whereas the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery was founded by Union Oil Company in 1955, and whereas the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery was established to process heavy crude oil from the Santa Maria Valley, and whereas in its half century of operation, the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery has expanded to find new and innovative ways to process products and create usable byproducts from the refining process. And whereas the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery has provided thousands of jobs for generations of Central Coast residents, and has been a good neighbor to the community, donating time and funds to hundreds of local causes, including youth and education. And whereas ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery has also reflected environmental responsibility, continually reinvesting in facility upgrades to generate improvements in air quality and other measures. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, again on behalf of the City Council, do hereby commend the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery on its 50th year of operation. And Jim, it's my pleasure to present this proclamation to you this evening. And once again, you get an opportunity to
continue to be a valued member of the community for the next 50 years as well. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you, Jim. All right, that takes us to item number 6, agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on or offer their thoughts on any issues, suggestions, matters that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that you hold your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as a whole. Any member of the audience that would like to step forward during community comment, again, items not on this evening's agenda. Okay, no takers. We'll close item 7. That brings us to item 8, consent agenda. This is a group of agenda items that the council normally approves in one action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on agenda items. And if you were able to pick up a copy of this evening's agenda, you notice that we have consent items 8A through 8O. We have a long consent agenda. So if there are members of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on any items on consent, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Any public comment on consent items? Okay, seeing none, we'll close that as well. And if there are consent items that any member of the council would like to pull for further discussion or an independent or individual action, this would be an opportunity for council members. What is the will of the council?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to pull 8G, please.
8G?
Thank you.
Any others? All right.
Yes. And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes, thank you. All right, we're back to item 8G. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I pulled this item for basically two reasons. This is an item that when it came before us during the regular public hearing process that I did not support, and so I wanted to pull it specifically for a roll call vote. But again, I just would like to point out that even though I believe that this is bad policy, I believe that it's bad policy, plus it's been brought to us with the idea that all we're really doing is wheeling water through our pipe system out of our jurisdiction. The reality is that on a monthly basis, our city staff will be reading meters. Our city staff will be determining the volume of water delivered by the city through the meter, calculating the wheeling fees. We will be multiplying and reading the meters, the amount of the fees, and transmit an invoice to the district for such fees. And what I'm getting at is that reality is that we are the service provider for this particular applicant. We're doing more than just wheeling water through our system. We're actually going to be the our public works folks, our billing department, will be the folks that these four lots in the next 30 years will be coming. And if there's a problem with the meter, they're going to come to the city of Arroyo Grande. If there's a problem with their billing, they're going to come to the city of Arroyo Grande. And I think that this is part of the reason why I didn't support this particular issue to begin with. I believe that it's not good policy, and I just wanted to bring those issues up. I do appreciate staff bringing this back and addressing several of the issues that I certainly brought up, and I appreciate that. But from the big picture, I can't support this item.
Okay. Any other comments on 8G? Okay. And it is your desire for a separate roll call vote on 8G?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we'll do that now. If there's no further discussion, roll call.
We need a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess we do.
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion that we approve item 8G.
All right, there is a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Now we'll do roll call. Evening, continued public hearing consideration of a proposed ordinance amending Chapter 12.16, Title 12, Arroyo Grande Municipal Code, relating to the Community Tree Program. Good evening, Dan.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. This is an item that was continued from our September 27th meeting to today. With regards to the Community Tree Ordinance and revisions to the existing Municipal Code, at that time we had a pretty lengthy discussion where the council pretty much gave direction to staff to modify the ordinance with four additional changes or improvements to the ordinance as proposed. One of those had to do with a definitive definition of a regulated tree. What staff is proposing for this to be is regulated tree means any tree located on properties in commercial, multifamily, or mixed-use zones, coastal live oak trees, Quercus agrifolia, on properties in single-family residential zones that measure 6 inches in diameter when measured 4 feet 6 inches from the base, and any tree located in the public right-of-way adjacent to the street on properties in single-family residential zones, whether city or privately owned. Most trees in public right-of-ways are city-owned or maintained by homeowners associations. Generally, the city right-of-way consists of a back of sidewalk or utility easement. Another item that the council wanted to change within the context of the code was an increase in the dimension of what size tree constitutes a regulated tree. Initially, a regulated tree was defined as 2 inches in diameter when measured 4 feet 6 inches from the base. Based on council direction, staff has increased this to 6 inches in diameter when measured 4 feet 6 inches from the base of the tree. Also within the definitions was the inclusion of lion's tailing, which means the removal of an excessive number of interlateral branches from the parent branches. Lion's tailing is not an acceptable practice. And also, finally, a clarification of tree pruning standards as applied to regulated trees, which states that the council may adopt by resolution standards for the pruning of regulated trees on private property with which all licensed tree companies doing business in the city shall comply. With that, I'd like to take it back to the council for any questions at this time.
Okay. Any questions or clarification on the staff report? Okay. This is a public hearing. Any member of the public that would like to come forward on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay. Whoops. Too quick with the gavel there.
Undo the gavel.
Yeah, I will. Hear this.
Mike McConville, 529 East Branch Street. I feel that rights are being taken away gradually by the city council. And this action, as far as I'm concerned, should not happen. I know what you're trying to do, and I know that people, I'd like to know the percentage of who violates tree ordinance, things like this. I think it's very small, and I hate to see these laws made for the 1% or the 0.5% or whatever. I think it's a small portion. And when you take and make laws based upon somebody violating law that's a very low majority, you impact everybody else to the tune that our personal property rights are being taken away. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Stacy Wogelmuth.
members of the City Council. We all realize you will rubber stamp the second reading of the amendments to the tree ordinance tonight. This action is unfortunate as it results in the city telling private citizens how to prune and otherwise manage their private trees. The irony and tragedy is that the city is not even doing a responsible job managing its own street trees. At our office, where the city forbade us to remove and replace any of our 23 trees, none of which were required as part of a landscape plan or other city approval, the city has let street trees go, damaging sidewalks, which creates a danger to clients and patients of the Grand Avenue Professional Building, including the elderly and infirm. I will now read a letter you received from Dr. Palchik's chemotherapy office in our office building a week or so ago. Dear City Council members, I am sorry I was unable to attend your September 27th of 05 meeting to speak with you about the tree issue around the Grand Avenue Professional Building. The trees were doing a lot of damage to the driveways, making the ground uneven and rather difficult for our patients to get to our office. Some patients needed assistance. I'm glad to see it is getting its due attention. Your prompt attention to this matter. Sincerely, Jennifer K. Zada, receptionist. The city has problems with its street tree maintenance all over the city, including most recently South Halcyon Road. For the city to begin to dictate how private people should prune their trees is a little like the pot calling the kettle black.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi, my name is Sally Whitecamp. Excuse me. And I live on James Way, and I've lived there for about 30 years. When we first moved there, looking at your picture back there, there weren't a lot of trees. In fact, we were one of the few houses up on James Way. Since then, of course, they put in Canyon Way, and they've put James Way all the way through, and there are a tremendous amount of trees there now. And another thing, we put in a lot of pine trees. We've taken some of them out and cleared it and all. But under the pine trees, the birds have brought acorns, and we get tons of little oak trees growing. And I like them, so I water them and encourage them. I've got a couple out in front now that are about 3 inches big. But I'm fearful that, you know, if you're going to have rules that I can't take those trees out, you know, when they're little guys, I'm just going to pull them on out because I don't know what I'm going to do down the road in landscaping. So that's kind of scary for me that I can't let my pines, my oak trees grow if the city's going to tell me what I can do and can't do with them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Bill Whitecamp, 251 James Way, and pardon me if I get into this just a little bit, but I major part of my career was working with Oak Woodlands, and I happen to have a passion for these kinds of ordinances, not so much for them, but against this type of ordinance, because I think they do more harm than good. It's very confusing if you read it. I hope you read it thoroughly, because, first of all, there really needs to be some corrections here on just what you're talking about. Page 3 of the ordinance is pretty clear as to what a regulated tree is. I think you cleaned that up pretty well. Actually, the first part that that Mr. Hernandez read on page 1 of the introduction is very clear. And then page 3, the first part is clear on regulated trees. But then you get down to tree, and you're talking about, first of all, you mentioned multi-trunk woody plant before that. So I think that sentence just totally needs to be eliminated. I don't understand why it wasn't. Then you go to the bottom of page 4 and get into the municipal code. And you talk about tree removal in multifamily residential, without a comma in there, mixed use or commercial zones. What happened to single family residential? Well, you mentioned over on the next page at the top, in the second sentence, you talk about Furthermore, no oak trees. Again, there's a lot of oak trees in the world, quite a few hundred species. And then you put in parentheses Quercus agrifolia. So I think you should have said no coastal live oak trees, in quotes, Quercus agrifolia. But then it really gets confusing. Or street trees greater than 6 inches in diameter when measured 4 feet, 6 inches from the base, planted in the right-of-way may be removed in single-family residential. And I remember you haven't mentioned single-family residential in this title, but now you're talking about it. That sounds like if only applies to oak trees in the right-of-way, or it only applies to street trees that are greater than 6 inches in diameter at 4.5 feet. And I don't think you mean that. I think you mean just the opposite. So that really needs to be cleared up. I don't agree with it anyway, but at least needs to be needs to agree with what you've said in the future and the past. And a big problem I have is down here in number five, number four, you totally leave out considerations of fire hazards. And I know I'm glad that our fire chief is with us tonight, because I've heard him talk about fire hazards in this town. And there are some of the worst you'll find anywhere in the county. I would think that he would agree with that. On a hot day in October, which we haven't had this year, on a windy day, there's some areas that are very vulnerable. And if you make people get permits to take out trees, and you have them go to your Parks and Recreation Director for that permit instead of your fire chief, I think you're making a serious mistake. I think he should be in this process. Maybe he is, but I don't see it in here at all. You mentioned general welfare of the city. You mentioned good forestry practices. You don't talk at all about fire hazards. And I think all of you got in the mail, I think every resident did, living with fire from your Fire Safe Council, the organization I used to be a member of. And I think you should read that, because a lot of that has to do with keeping trees and brush down around your home. And some way that needs to be integrated in here. I mean, you don't want to make it a war zone around your house, but it needs to be safe. And we have a lot of areas that aren't safe right now. And as my wife mentioned, these areas are getting more vegetation all the time as we get more population. Look at that picture. Everybody knows what they're doing. And so you end up reacting to perhaps a problem that you have in this city, and you end up overreacting. And you take a tree, which is kind of a weed tree, and I'm not saying that in a negative way, I'm just saying it grows very easily, the coastal live oak, and you try to protect it when you maybe are encouraging people to take them out or to cut them before they get to be 7 inches. And in some ways, I think that might be good, because I think, like you said, we have too many of those in some places. But I think you need to be into an educational program. John Keisler had it right, I thought, when he was here. He was the Parks and Recreation Director, and I worked with him as an extension advisor, natural resources, livestock and range, and he worked with other people, too, to put together programs on education. He wasn't an expert on oaks, but he really appreciated them, and he knew how to get the appreciation increased in the city. The way was to do it through education, and he held a number of workshops. He had a whole variety of people plan these workshops. He didn't just go to one organization or one interest group. He went to the tree people, the arborists, and also the environmentalists and the agencies. He put together an excellent program, and he packed the house up there at the Women's Center. And then there would be a lunch, and then we'd have a speech, all kinds of program. And then afterwards, we'd go out and tour an area of the city where they had done some really nice landscaping with oaks. And then he'd have the arborists give demonstrations. And people went home liking oaks, and they went home liking what the city was doing. They weren't hitting them over the head with regulations and telling them where they could put their trees in their backyard and which ones they could prune and how they could prune them and how they could take them out, which I understand this is what you could do here. So I just want to emphasize education. I think that's a better way to go. I think that, there's no one way to manage trees in your backyard or your front yard. I think that you need to work with homeowners so that they can develop good programs and they have a good understanding of what's going on, and not try to tell them how to do it by sending somebody out there, your limited staff, send them out there, tell them they have to move that tree even though they want to put their swing set there. And you say, well, a swing set's not a good reason to take that tree out. And you can get into all kinds of problems with this. And for a tree like the coastal live oak, which really doesn't have a regeneration problem in California, I think you're making a huge mistake. I'm going to give this packet to the mayor, and if he wants to share it with others,
Thank you.
And here has cleaned up a lot of where there was some vagueness in the last meeting. I definitely appreciate the new definitions. I would suggest the comment referring to the oaks. There are spots where we do use the word coastal live oaks, and there are others where we just use oaks. And would suggest that we maybe change that to just say coastal live oaks for all of them. I think it's real important to understand that what we're trying to do here is not to, specifically on single-family residential property, we're not talking about any trees other than the coastal live oaks. So any tree other than that, you would not need a permit. And I don't believe the city is going to be looking at not allowing trees to be taken down. The issue really is when we talk about some of the landmark trees and stuff, the concern has been that we don't lose trees that everyone really appreciates. So I don't think you really have to be concerned about whether or not if you have a lot of oak trees growing on your property and at some point you want to thin those out, I don't see that as a problem. The reality is there is a procedure in place right now that if the Parks and Rec were to deny your application, it would come to us if you appealed it, and there will be more than ample opportunity to share those. And I think we are definitely concerned with the individual's rights. What we don't want to see happen, though, is to see the character of the city lost because someone decides that they're going to clear-cut their lot and change the complete character of it. So that is the intent here, not to overly regulate. I think what had happened at the Grand Office project, office building, is that they were given permission to cut down 15 of the trees over a three-year period, and they chose to not appeal that decision to us, but to go ahead and cut all the trees down. And that's where the real problem is when the ordinances that we have are denied, and the owners take the law into their own hands. So that's where I have a real problem with the issues that have been spread on this. This is a good ordinance. It will continue to preserve what I think the majority of people of Arroyo Grande consider is very important. I know personally when I was running for council, I got phone calls because people were upset that the eucalyptus for the water tank came down. And they were very upset about that. And the city has replaced vegetation up there. And that was eucalyptus. The oak tree, I think, is a very strong symbol of our city, and I do believe it's very important that we protect those trees. So I have no problem approving this ordinance.
Properties in commercial areas, those have already been regulated. Multifamily, those have already been regulated. And mixed-use zones, those have already been regulated. So we're not changing our ordinance in regards to any one of those zoning criteria. The two areas that we've increased this particular ordinance to include would be one along the public right-of-way adjacent to streets, which I think is important from the aspect of having some sort of community input as to how street trees are managed so that we can continue to have nice roadways that are covered with trees. So that would be the one thing that I would support. The other thing that we've done in this ordinance is to regulate oak trees, or coastal live oaks to be specific, in single-family residential. And as I spoke last time, I think that from my perspective, I think that is overstepping our boundaries. I think that even though I think it's important for us to manage our resources, I believe that the people who manage the resources best are the folks who actually are tending those trees on their private property. I believe we have a responsibility far greater when we talk about commercial properties, when we talk about multifamily, when we talk about mixed-use properties and streetscapes, because all of those affect the community at large. When we talk about going into someone's backyard and regulating trees in someone's backyard, I don't know where the community benefit comes in besides the fact that, yes, coastal oaks are a tree that we find is an important tree to our city. Yet I believe that the best stewards are those that actually are the ones that are dealing with those trees. And so I can't support I can't support the ordinance moving in that direction. I do think that there needs to be some language cleaned up, as Mr. Whitecamp has pointed out. The one question I know that we talked about at our last meeting that didn't get addressed, and that was under Section 4, when we talk about 12.16.170 at the bottom, tree removal in, and I believe that we need to have tree removal in residential mixed use defining tree, where at one point it is 6 inches, and then we talk about a multi-trunk woody plant totaling 4 inches. Why wouldn't that total 6 inches?
That's a good question.
That's a good question. That was the old definition in the ordinance. So if the council would choose to have that removed, that would be fine.
To me, that just seems consistent if that's what we're going to choose as the definition. If it's multi-trunk, it seems to be smaller. I don't know. But consistency, I think, is always important. And then I certainly I think it's prudent that we talk about fire hazard, and I think it's prudent that we look at documentation you know, living with fire, and certainly addressing that as a potential for looking at appropriate management around not only in all of our zones, but primarily around our single-family residents, and including that on page 5 under Section 4, putting some sort of fire hazard in there, I think would be important. All in all, this. It's important, I think, for the public to understand. We had an unfortunate incident on Grand Avenue with a property owner who took out 23 trees. That property owner had the city's permission to take out 8 trees, and it was going to be well managed over time. And it's unfortunate that this ordinance is getting lumped in with that, because this was actually started way before that. And we've asked our staff, which I believe has done a great job in this particular ordinance, to certainly bring to us what they felt was good management practices. We certainly want to continue to be a tree city. I believe that we do a good job in managing both our public trees and the things that we're responsible for, and I certainly need to, there's apparent that we have to have standards as to what's appropriate in the particular zones, and so I support what this is doing, but I think that in doing so, we've probably moved into an area that I certainly feel uncomfortable in, moving into people's side yards and backyards. And you know, I haven't had a chance to look over this material, but at first glance the question is raised, is does this ordinance really promote people to plant oaks, or does it promote them to say, wait a minute, I can actually plant anything else but an oak in my yard and not have it regulated? And so what are we trying to get at here? And I think that, to me, what I've found is that the private property owners, how do we really we can't regulate it, so why do we even try? I think it's important that we have good guidelines and standards, which I believe is put forth here, but I cannot support moving this ordinance into an area that really doesn't have, in my opinion, the community benefit like the other areas I believe do. So I would probably, if the ordinance were to be amended to strike out the areas dealing with single-family residential and so forth, other than the right-of-way, then I would support this. But if it isn't, and if it's the council's will to move forward, I won't be able to support the ordinance as presented.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie?
Well, I think first I'd like to deal with the other part of this ordinance that is in addition to what was here before, which has to do with the pruning, specifically the pruning of trees in multifamily commercial districts and in street tree area, which is basically, in addition to not cutting them down, we are going to provide for correct pruning. In other words, that we don't create a dangerous situation where somebody has mispruned a tree that sits in the public right-of-way or in a commercial district. That by going through this process, we will in fact increase public safety, and we will be looking for people not to do the wrong thing and create an ugly tree situation through this regulation. So I think that's the other part of this taking place, or misprune a tree that ultimately kills it, which certainly wouldn't be in the public interest as well. So first, I want to point out that that has been added here. I want to deal with the issue that Mr. Councilman Dickens raised, and that has to do with oak trees outside of the public right-of-way. And this stems from, if we were doing a development project, this is kind of a comment and a question, saying if we're doing a development project, we actually require that they protect these trees in the middle of a development project, a commercial development project or a home development project. But in fact, there's no requirement that before the project comes forward, just cut the tree off the base. And I think that is as much what prompts this as any, I'm going to call it general, you know, we certainly have a general plan that we want to protect oak trees. But I think that what we're looking at here is that we're going to protect the oak tree before a development project comes forward anywhere on a property. Because, in fact, we had a couple instances where that's exactly what happened. Just before a development project came forward, a really large oak tree disappeared. So I think what we're looking for in including all oak trees here, again, this is not a regulation that says that that you absolutely can never cut down a tree. It does say that you would have to go through a process, and in fact, if it made sense to cut down that tree, if there was too many of them close, and particularly the comment that it creates a fire hazard, certainly if part of this process the chief of police or the fire chief steps up and says, oh, this is a fire hazard, I can't imagine we'd ever even get into an appeal process, that we would need an appeal process to have a tree that the fire department considered a fire hazard removed. In fact, I think we probably require it. So I'm not sure that we need to add that language. If that makes everybody more comfortable, I'm fine with that. But I think the process certainly includes that as well. I can actually really go forward with it with the cleanup language. I think sort of what happened here was we did switch, which I think was a good idea, to define regulated tree, and then we didn't keep repeating it through. We probably just should have kept saying regulated tree, regulated tree, regulated tree, so that we understood where we were going, and we wouldn't have those little conflicts that are in there. So I can support it with that kind of cleanup language, just to clear that up. I think this may be part of the cut and paste problem that the gentleman referred to. You cut and paste and then you add, cut and paste and add. I will say Monterey and Carmel have been very successful in their tree ordinance program. They have great trees, and so I'd be inclined to say that their program probably does in fact work to do the cut and paste. But I do think we need to clean up that little bit of language. Otherwise, I can support it as written. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to thank everyone that spoke on this issue, particularly Mr. Whitecamp. I appreciate your comments. I don't have a lot of problems with this ordinance or the amendments to this ordinance, because this is not something that's new. This is something that's been in our municipal code. We're just revising it. I think that's important to bear in mind. The issue of fire safety, I think, fits very nicely into Section 4, which is Section 12-16.16.070, amending, adding point G, where we talk about exceptions for a tree removal permit not required for the following, and it talks about several issues. Now, one of them almost fits with fire safety. I think we could easily slide in some language there on fire safety. And I'd be very comfortable with that. I agree with the cleaning up the language on more and more education on that and trying to identify them and bring them into play and getting them registered and then protecting those trees. I don't know that this is the way to do it, though. So I think I'd be more comfortable if we eliminated the language about single-family districts. Other than that, I can support the measure as it's before us with the change that I mentioned.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I've given this a fair amount of thought, and it's interesting listening to the positions that have preceded me, and I too want to thank you for coming forward, Bill, and providing the information, and clearly I would support the language clarifications that others have described. The Mayor Pro Tem, I think, presented a placeholder where we can insert some fire prevention language. And I was just skimming the two documents that Bill left with us up here, and they're very well done. And I think we can probably insert some of the language in here. It's interesting because in looking through, excuse me, in looking through the wildfire threat for homeowners, it refers to four different zones in this pamphlet: the access zone, the defensible zone, the interior zone, and the built zone. And I think the one that is more applicable to some of the points that were made is the defensible zone. And it does give some guidance here as to what you can do for perhaps better preparing the surroundings around your home. There's a little pocket of points to consider here. Wildland fuel reduction area. Remove all dead vegetation, dead shrubs, dried grass, fallen branches, so on and so forth. Thin out thick shrubs and trees to create a separation between them. Remove ladder fuels by removing low tree branches. Prune the shrubs under the tree. If you're using a mower during fire season, mow before 10 a.m. There is one statement, it's the only one I could find in both of these documents, that offer the fact that you could remove a tree which presents a fire or safety hazard. I don't think this ordinance steps in front of that guideline. I think what it does is trigger a process, as someone else mentioned, whereby a homeowner could, in fact, if a determination is made that that is an existing situation, can go through the process that's outlined here and get a permit or perhaps a quick inspection by Terry or his folks and say, yeah, it's probably, no matter how, you know, how much you trim it or prune it, it still poses a fire threat. In those situations, I would see the whole process being expedited. So the fire aspect of this, if we embellish this thing a little bit more with some of this language, Dan, I think that's a good fit where the Mayor Pro Tem had that language going in. The sticky issue for me here, and this is one that was gnawing at me even when I kind of gave a green light before, the sticking issue for me is in fact single-family residence. Not so much for what we're trying to do. I believe that that, you know, the attempt that we're making here is honorable and just. From a practical standpoint, my concern is our ability to enforce it, and that's what I'm concerned about. You know, I think there was an old rule that someone told me: never put a law in the books that you have no means to enforce. And so, you know, that whole issue is kind of looming large with me. I'm hoping that there might be some way where we can kind of re-script this a little bit so that the spirit of what we're attempting to do is still intact. But yet we don't nail this thing down so hard and fast that we run into an enforcement issue that, you know, we may fall short of. So those are my thoughts. I'd be open for some suggestions or feedback from staff on that.
Just in terms of enforcement, and just like other kind of code enforcement and neighborhood services, enforcement related to meeting a large number of the incidents that we're trying to focus on. Do you agree with that, Dan?
So you're saying your position is still leave the single family reference and language in at this point?
That's entirely you know, up to the council. There was some discussion just in terms of the, from a policy standpoint, of whether you feel that you want that level of enforcement in. So that's really a policy issue. I'm just saying, as far as enforcement, while it is challenging by working with the firms that do tree trimming, we think we can be fairly effective enforcement. It won't catch everything, but it will help catch probably the majority of cases that come up by educating them and working directly with those firms.
Did we get any feedback from some of the, and we did, of course, pattern this after existing ordinances. Did we get any feedback from some of those other cities with regard to this particular issue, single-family residents and ability to enforce?
So we again, there was a wide variety of cities we looked at. Some of them were a lot more stringent than what we're proposing, and basically they were enforced through code enforcement or basically neighborhood policing, where people would call in on one another next door in combination with an education program to try to limit those kind of things from taking place. Another thing that came to mind with Mr. Wykamp's information is we should be able to put some of that on our webpage in the Parks and Recreation or even in the fire department areas of the webpage to give people a little bit more understanding of the fire abatement issues. Since I just saw those materials, it sounds like it'd be a great place to put them on to start getting the word out on those kind of things as well.
Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
I haven't changed my opinion about the oak trees, but I'd like to point out kind of what Councilman Guthrie dovetailed on, because the Planning Commission is working on an issue right now that very much would be impacted by this ordinance. Up on Crown Hill, there's a proposal for a PUD, I believe, with four new homes. And right, the issue that they're dealing with is whether or not there's enough parking and if they can move the houses down the hill. And there's concern between whether the oak trees come out or whether there's more parking at it. If we don't do anything to protect those oak trees, there's no incentive for those that owner right now to not go chop those oak trees down. And they're nice trees. They're very nice trees. And I think the concern that we need to face is that in the past, beautiful old oak trees have added a lot of value to property. The concern that I have is that as properties are continuing to be subdivided or granny units are added or anything like that, you're going to see those trees disappear if it means economics. And my concern is that we could see a dramatic change in the character of the city if we do. Whether 6 inches is the correct number, maybe that's what we should be talking about. Maybe so that we're not discouraging people from allowing their little seedlings to grow for a while and then thinning them, maybe we should be talking about what do we really consider a true oak tree that we would really be sad if we saw it gone. And I think Crown Hill is a perfect example where there's a lot. It's an antiquated subdivision where we're going to see more redevelopment taking place up there, and we're going to lose all those oaks or a good number of them if there is no disincentive to take them out. I really think this is very important, and we're missing a great opportunity right now if we do not save the trees.
Well, let me ask a question here in terms of the example that Councilmember Arnold just gave, bouncing that off of this ordinance. Is there a correlation? And if not, maybe you can elaborate.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question in terms of the correlation.
Well, if the ordinance moves forward without reference to the single, or we reword single family, the single family reference, soften it or whatever, is there a correlation with a situation where we have a project coming in right now or any new project in terms of the disposition of trees on a property?
Well, as I understand it, that goes back to Councilman Guthrie's comment that this having this protection in here will help to prevent any removal of trees before that project takes place. I think, is that your reference too?
Yeah, that's my concern.
Now, we're very open to the comment of modifying that 6 inches some more. Is staff would not be opposed to that. It's been very. I think it started out objectively in terms of looking at other ordinances when we came up with the first numbers. As we changed it, it's fairly subjective, and frankly, it's still probably lower of what I had originally envisioned in terms of the type of trees. When I think about it in my mind, the type of trees that I think are, while they're not designated as landmarks, they're really seen as somewhat as community landmarks, and maybe the idea of increasing that further is a compromise that might meet everybody's objectives. I don't know. We'd be open to that if you want to go in that direction.
Well, let me check in with Councilmember Dickens and Mayor Pro Tem if that language modification took place. Would that change some minds here or not?
For me, it would have to be a significant, you know, we'd have to designate these trees as being significant so that anyone that, you know, any individual family in the city could look at their trees and say, oh, This is not a tree they're talking about. I can trim this. I can take this tree out, and there'd be no question about it. It's going to have to really, you know, be a substantial tree, and it's going to be clearly defined. Then I understand where both Mr. Guthrie and Mr. Arnold were coming from in terms of protecting significant trees. I'd like to see that language being very clear, though. I don't want to become the tree police on individual single-family properties.
Because I think our... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to put in my 2 cents, Mr. Mayor, in regards to your question. I think that this ordinance is not in place now, and yet the trees that you're talking about that are coming to our attention because of development proposals that are now in question about removal, it's interesting. Why haven't they been removed already then?
Well, I think it may be somewhat of a ignorance on the part of the applicant if they didn't understand that there may be a restriction to taking those trees out. They didn't consider it. I mean, I think if they were told right now they're going to need to lose a lot to create more parking, and so they're only going to build 3 homes instead of 4, I guarantee the next applicant that has a similar situation and we don't have an ordinance like this, those trees won't be on their plan. They'll be gone.
Well, yeah, I don't know whether I agree with you, but nonetheless, I think that, and as I, when I looked at this, and I certainly am also struggle with the issue of when we have development proposals coming before us and saying, okay, and I'm the first one to say, let's try to save that one, and that one. Why not move this over here? And sometimes I win a few, and sometimes I lose a few. And I think that's the appropriate process that we go through. But I also think that when we look at the big picture, when we put something like this into place, the proposals that we're seeing forth, and maybe there'll be more in the future, are insignificant in numbers compared to when we put this in place, the number of people that we're affecting. And that, to me, I have to weigh those two, and I have to say, you know what, I'm not sure I want to go there. And I'm not sure that even if we did go there, we'd be able to regulate it anyways. So why? And what are we trying to achieve? Those proposals that we see come before us, and what I'm seeing already is that the people are already coming before us. Most folks, I know the individual coming before us up on Crown Hill, he wants to save those trees as much as possible as well. So it's really what we as a city regulate. Maybe we need to reduce the parking in order, if that's so important, then we need to reduce the parking in order to allow those trees to be there. And that's the discretionary review that we have under our control. And I guess my biggest problem with this particular ordinance, I think we do a good job, but I think we've taken it a little bit too far. And I think we need to bring it back and make it reasonable and look at the things that we as a public, and that's why we're up here, what are the benefits to the public? And those are the things that we see when we're driving down the road. We're not poking ourselves in someone's backyard. And I know from our, and this is the other problem that I see happening, is all of a sudden you have our code enforcement issues are complaint driven. And so someone goes in their backyard, cuts down a tree, and their neighbor doesn't like them, so they're going to be calling them, and then it becomes a dispute. And I don't think that's the role that we need to be playing. And I don't think that that's really what we want to be getting ourselves into. And if we're going to be put into a pickle, Dan's going to go out and mediate neighborhood disputes based on what's going on in someone's backyard. And to me, that's not where I want to go.
Mr. Mayor, if I
okay.
could just I'm sorry, just...
Sure, go ahead.
I think one of staff's points here, though, was that the enforcement mechanism, if a tree of any significant size is not going to be taken down by the neighbor. It's going to be taken down by a professional. Now, it's possible that somebody's going to go out and take a large oak tree, jump up there with their chainsaw and knock it down and turn it into firewood, but it's far more likely, and that's going to be the enforcement mechanism. So the scenario you're identifying there, I don't think is nearly as likely as you're thinking. I also have seen, in fact, I can name a couple of instances where really significant oak trees were taken out to create a space before the development proposal did come through. You know, and so I think to me that it's, and I would vote for this even if we remove the oak tree. I won't vote against it because I think the other advantages here are huge to us over the oak tree. But to me, it's just inconsistent that we would talk to somebody who was developing property and hold them to a totally different set of rules, whereas if they didn't develop the property, they could do whatever they want. And particularly when we see commercial properties, same rule. Cut all the trees down. If you'll remember the big oak tree that was cut down where the senior center or the senior apartments being built now is an example. All of a sudden, the tree disappeared before the development proposal came forward. So I think that's the thinking here. I guess the other side of this is if we don't protect them, and they're gone, you know, we can unprotect them. We can choose in a development or through this process to allow a tree to be removed if it makes sense. Whereas if we don't have this in place, then the trees are gone. That's my final comment. Thanks.
Any other final comments?
Okay.
What do you think about taking another shot at the language?
Well, the one comment I wanted to add, we were kind of going in a direction of considering maybe some changes in the diameter, and Dan and I discussed a little bit, and we were thinking if it was a diameter of 12 inches, we're probably looking at a 30 to 40 year tree, which more accurately matches, I think, our original intent when we got into this. So our original intent was to try to protect trees that if they were removed is a real loss to the community because it's going to take a whole another generation to replace that tree, and that's really the issue. Even on private property, we hate to see a tree lost if there wasn't a good reason for it, and that's where the permit comes in. It doesn't mean a permit's not going to approve the removal of a tree. It's going to try to reduce situations where they're removed where there's no real reason to have to remove the tree, and thereby it removes the benefit of the community and even future property owners of that individual property to benefit from this tree that's taken, almost a generation to grow. So I don't know if that helps any in terms of if we really go to limit it to those trees that are really more in the landmark tree type category anyways, but just haven't been gone through the process or been able to get designated because the property owners have not wanted to do it.
Okay. Any other comments? Follow up on Steve's comment? Okay. If not, then go ahead and see. We'll try a motion.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I will propose, let me get to this, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending portions of Chapter 12.16 of Title 12 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding the Community Tree Program with the changes that we will refer to all oaks as coastal live oaks. I believe it was the intent to delete the definition of tree and just refer to trees as the regulated trees, to change under regulated trees the residential zones that measure 12 inches in diameter when measured 4'6" from the base for the oak trees, and then to add in section, on page 6, section G, exceptions, an item 5 that would deal with immediate fire safety.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, clarification on the motion. and that we would use some of the reference material, language of some of the reference material as distributed this evening to embellish that portion on fire safety.
That is fine.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, hearing none. Roll call, please.
just a clarification, Mr. Mayor. The language you're talking about including, do you want it included tonight? Because if we're going to take action, we need to include it tonight. Otherwise, you can direct staff to bring it back.
Well,
what staff had, and I'm sorry to interrupt, what staff had unilaterally done was add to 1216070C4 after historic values, just the words fire safety. So it would read scenic beauty, historic values, fire safety, and the general welfare of the city to deal with that issue. But we could certainly enhance that language.
You know, I don't think you need to, Tim. I think if you make reference to fire safety, maybe this is something that we keep in our
educational
yeah, and just have it available for homeowners. I'm surprised we don't have something like this already. So,
Mr. Mayor, could we add the word immediate fire safety? And the only reason I say that is if it's not immediate, they could still apply for the permit. If it's immediate, then they could skip the permit step. Because my concern is the definition of fire safety. If I'm worried about a firestorm and so I cut all my trees down, and that's my justification, versus if there is, i.e., we're in the dry season. I'm just looking not to try to create any more problems.
I think where that'll fit in, if we include the language that was just proposed on 4, and then also in the exceptions under G for immediate fire safety, that might meet the bill.
That would work.
Well, somehow or another, we're going to have to weave in a definition of what that is. We're going to have to somehow or another clarify imminent threat versus immediate fire, because you say immediate fire hazard or safety, and that's subjective. But if there's an imminent threat, which in my mind, you got a fire burning and it's moving towards your house, and you've got a tree in close proximity, you're gonna take it down. You're not gonna go get a permit. That's an imminent threat. somehow or another, we're gonna have to script the language to clarify that. Or else you're going to wind up with someone coming forward with their own decision that there was an immediate threat, whatever that is, if we don't give criteria.
That'll go under definitions under 12.16.1.020.
I actually like your word better, imminent threat. I think that is a clearer picture of what
we're talking about. But imminent threat still needs to be defined in 12.16.020 definitions.
And could that be something to the effect of a clear and present immediate danger? Tim, could you help us with that wording?
I can, but as soon as you start carving out exceptions like that, you're going to find people making, it guts the permit process, because you're going to find people making those decisions. I mean, you're exempting immediate fire danger or imminent threat, unless we're really specific about an imminent threat, and I'm not sure that we can do that immediately here, because even if you used your words, I think it's vague enough where people under certain circumstances would feel as though they had the ability to remove trees. So I think we're coming to a point where we may want to go back and retool it a little if that's going to be...
I'm not sure we need a definition.
Well, I'm thinking at this point, I'll go along with the majority of the council, but there have been enough discussion here with regard to language modification. If this, were to be, perhaps wordsmithed again, come back as a consent item, and then we can read again, make sure that our concerns have been addressed. Maybe that's the safest way to go. I don't know how everyone else feels.
If it's on a consent, that's fine.
I don't think you can come back as a consent. They have to be a continued public hearing, right?
Well, there's no requirement on this one that we have a public hearing, at least not that I'm aware of. It's not a development code amendment. But we may want to just continue the public hearing and bring it back. I don't know what the next agenda is like. Bring it back next time. We can certainly make the modifications the council is interested in and sort of abbreviate it.
Well, is there any way we can do this as a consent?
Yeah. Again, it wouldn't be illegal to do it as a consent item. It's not a required public hearing item. It just requires two readings. Yeah.
I'm inclined to say bringing it back as a public hearing. I will point out that even with this, the public picked up a couple of important, you know, wordsmithing issues that, well, maybe the council would have picked them up, but I didn't hear it in question. So I'd be inclined to say let's not put it on the consent agenda and just bring it back, and hopefully it goes quicker. But
I'm okay with that. There are too many loops that need to be closed here from a language standpoint. So,
all right, then, Mr. Mayor, I'll modify my motion that we continue this item to a date specific. Is it November 1st, 8th, to November 8th?
Does that give you enough time, Dan?
Yeah.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second
it. Roll call, please. Discussion.
Discussion. Specifically, what's going to be modified? Can you tell me what's coming?
What I understand is that all references within the ordinance will refer to coastal live oaks, Quercus agrifolia. Elimination of the definition of tree, and just leaving in regulated tree. In section 1216070C4, adding immediate fire safety. In section 1216070G, adding another comment, immediate fire safety, and then under definition, defining what immediate fire safety is, I believe.
And also the 12.
Oh, the tree size to 12 inches, 12 inches in diameter.
One other point of clarification, the oak tree reference is only for oaks not in the not street trees and not on commercial property. I just want to be sure that's clear. It's not just oak trees. It's just oak trees that we had included, that I'm going to say were in backyards, but we're not in the public. We're not street trees, and we're not and we're not on commercial property.
It's basically all oak trees plus other trees in the public right of way. Fronting the street, not in side yards.
But again, it's not all oak trees; it's just coastal live oak trees.
Mm-hmm. 12 inches.
Okay. Any other discussion? Roll call.
Councilmember Arnold.
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens.
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. Let's see, I think we discussed at some point that this was going to go really quick. Okay, that takes us to item 10, continued business. We have none this evening. Item 11, new business. We have none. Item 12, city council reports. I'm first up with Slocog and Slorda. I think we've met many times with various representatives of SLOCOG, to include the board meeting and an executive board meeting. So lots of activity going on right now, particularly related to funding. We're continuing to fight the battle in terms of timing for Briscoe Halcyon. It continues not to be good news in terms of the hoped-for funding window, but we're still working on those issues, and we'll keep you up to speed with some specifics. We have meetings planned in the very near future with some of the supervisors, and also there's continuing work between our staff and SLOCOG staff to see if we can, if there isn't some way we can continue to keep this on the front burner and hopefully do something before 2010, 2011. On the Slorda side, the big issue there has been the, as you all well know, we got the materials on the taxi program, the senior taxi program, and there may be some alternatives utilizing some of the Slorda resources and also ride on to try and fill the gap. I think our goal here is not to rely on taxicab for any sustained service to seniors. It seems as though they're vulnerable to economic times, and a taxi company gets to a point where it's no longer beneficial for them for one reason or another, and they opt out of the program. So we're looking at maybe incorporating the program using other existing public transportation and private transportation means. South County Sanitation District, I would invite all of you, if you have an opportunity. I know you have nothing else to do and no other commitments, but if you can cut some time out of your schedules, I'm sure I can arrange a tour of the sanitation, the sewer plant. And just so you can see, our last capital improvement addition to that plant, it's quite impressive. And I know a lot of us can't get excited about sewer treatment plants, but this particular project has is really something that I think is worthy of all of us taking a look at. I was out there. The chlorinator is the one that I'm referring to, and what it does in relation to the rest of the plant, and its tie-in to sewer outfall, and it's quite a piece of work. And so it might be beneficial for those of you who are not familiar. I know Councilmember Dickens is very familiar with it, but just to go out and get an orientation. We are a member of that district and a member of that board, and so at some point it would be good education, I think. Under number three, other, I've been meeting a lot with the Zone 11A Advisory Committee, and also working hard on the task force, the Advisory Committee Task Force. We're in the process of preparing for an update on what activities we've been doing to better prepare for the winter and work on the flood control channel and the levee. A lot of activity has been going on, and we're preparing to give an update report to the Board of Supervisors. And I think that concludes my report. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. In terms of the last Zone 3 Water Advisory Board meeting, I was unable to attend that meeting. The APCD meeting, I was out of town, so I wasn't able to really see that one. We did meet, the Fire Oversight Committee did meet last week, and things continue to go very well in terms of the cooperation between Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, and the department is operating extremely well. The shared use of training and working together has been very productive. I believe we're getting ready to have some information from the we're getting some information in terms of the study that Pismo Beach had commissioned, but that has not come to us yet. I think that's coming soon. And that's my report for the night.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mine's going to be extremely brief because the SCAT, South County Area Transit, canceled their last meeting, so I have our last quarterly meeting, so that I have no report there. And the South County Youth Coalition, I believe, is meeting later on this month, so I'll be attending that and give a report at their next meeting.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Mine will be short as well. ABC meets tomorrow, although I said that last time, and there was a meeting the next day. We do now have a new executive director. Mike Manichek is officially on board, so we're looking forward to moving forward with that. And I think you'll start seeing him around town quite a bit. I've already seen him on TV several times.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Mine also was short. Integrated Waste Management did not meet. We meet in, I believe, 2 weeks. The Joint Powers Insurance Authority, no meeting, and the RAC, I was out of town and unable to attend, as was my alternate. So that's my report. Thank you.
Okay. That takes us to item 13, City Council Member Items. I have one, and Council Member Guthrie has one. This is the item that I have is listed here as indicated here as an animal feeding ordinance, and that was actually my faux pas, if you will. I gave this information to Kelly in a hurry before I went to the meeting, but it's actually a wildlife feeding ordinance, and this is something that Supervisor help me out here, Jim
Patterson.
If you're watching, Jim, I'm sorry. It's the cold. Supervisor Patterson pulled together a group of individuals, some very interesting presentations on the pros, not too many pros, but certainly the cons of residents in a on the urban rural fringe that make a habit of putting food out for wildlife. Tremendous downside to that. And so what I would like to do is we picked up some sample ordinances and some background material, and what I'd like to do is bring it back as an item, and I think the goal is to provide you with an opportunity to read the background and then bring it forward for some form of perhaps an action to support. I think the way this is going to materialize is that the county will pass an ordinance, and then they have it fairly well worked out from a strategy standpoint, and then I think the cities, the individual cities, will take a look at it and figure out the best way to integrate. And it's mostly the cities that do find themselves on the kind of the rural fringe. So I'd like to bring that back at some point, if it's okay with you.
I don't have a problem with being brought back. I just have one question. If we're concerned about how we're going to regulate people cutting down trees in their backyard, do we believe we're going to be able to regulate them putting a bowl of food out, I guess is my only question.
Well, I think you need to read the background material. We don't have time now, but they do address that issue.
Okay.
Mr. Chair? Oh. So did you want to, I heard you say, I think you want us to bring us back for discussion before the county does their ordinance? Otherwise, we could just wait till the county provides some direction with their ordinance and bring the ordinance back.
I think that's what we can do, Steve. Okay. But in the meantime, I can give you the background information. We can put it in everybody's packet. At least everyone will know what's coming.
Great.
Yeah, so this isn't something that's going to be on the front burner that's going to come back to us right away. what Jim was looking for, what Jim Patterson was looking for, was sort of tacit support for the direction, recognizing that it's becoming pretty much of a significant problem, much more so than the county, for the county than for us, but we're part of it. Okay, 13B, Councilmember Guthrie. Yeah,
this came up as I think the mayor was absent last time, but this came up in our direction to staff regarding the phase one, phase two up at Five City Center, that we'd given staff direction to look at putting in temporary the temporary traffic improvements in order to see how this improvement would work. And my concern when I got home and I was filing away all the reports and everything that I had in my notes that I had with this, I realized that, in fact, I'm not sure what we would prove by putting in the temporary measures, because the restaurant pad is unoccupied, and as is now, I'm going to say, half of the retail. I mean, only Trader Joe's is operating, and the one part's been vacant forever, and the Hallmark Cards is gone as well. So I'm not sure that putting in, if we put it in tomorrow, that we prove anything about how that program will ultimately work. We create all the inconvenience, because a lot of people like that left-hand turn, but we wouldn't have any of the tests that at least I was looking for. You know, I wasn't trying to see if it physically would fit. I was trying to see if, in fact, it would achieve what we're trying to achieve. So I was thinking of a couple of possible directions we could go, and I don't know whether this comes back as another item or not, but one would be just to go ahead and maybe eliminate the idea of using temporary measures at all, and wait until the proposal comes through and actually, you know, review it at that point. The other option would be to set some sort of deal that we're not going to put temporary measures in until at the very least the restaurant site's occupied, and really until some more of the retail is, so that we would actually have the traffic generation in phase two that would provide the test. And that was me. It isn't that I I really do want to know whether it's going to work, but I don't think that we're going to get an adequate test of it here without the traffic generation in phase two from the additional uses. So that was what I was looking for, just kind of maybe a second look at this as to how we would go forward with the temporary measures. So that's what I was looking for, either general direction here or maybe coming back.
Mr. Mayor, question. Are they actually moving forward with the temporary measures, or what was their plan?
Well, staff was working with them, beginning to, but then we saw this item on here, so we figured we'd wait up before we proceed any more. But, I had some discussions with them, and I know Don has it figured out in terms of what kind of materials we could use to set something up.
I guess I kind of agree with you. I mean, I'm not sure we're going to see the real impact until... I mean, there's no doubt phase two is going to create dramatic change when all the buildings that are built are full and the new buildings are built. So if the expectation is that we're not going to see the results that we really want to see right now, maybe it is better to wait.
Well, I, for one, would like to see it come back anyway, for personal reasons, obviously. I was ill when this matter was heard at the last council meeting, so I didn't have an opportunity to provide any direct input. But I did follow along on TV and read the materials. If there is an opportunity, I would like to kind of chime in. If this came back, I'd have that opportunity. I have mixed emotions about, I guess, the rationale that Councilmember Guthrie just shared. I do and I don't. I agree that it would be good if we could actually see the on-the-ground intensity of use, because that's the proof of the pudding, and that's been one of my pet peeves with, traffic counts or reading projections out of a manual. The traffic manual and not dealing with actual driveway counts. So from that standpoint, I could probably go along with something like that. What's giving me pause is the issue that we would conceivably move ahead with creating that density and that intensity of use, or the intensity of use aspect of it, without any mitigation. So I guess if we were to nail down that loose end, that was pretty much being held in abeyance until we actually were dealing with realistic flows, I could probably go along with it, as long as they, sign on the dotted line that they're willing to, give us some assurance that that's going to happen. So, yeah, I'd be okay bringing it back.
Bringing it back. I guess I'm confused. At this point, the course they were going on is one to work with staff in doing these temporary tests of some of the measures, and at the same time taking the plan that was kind of conceptually agreed upon, I guess, and then moving forward with their application for Pad I, and then that's when their intent would be to bring it back. Nothing was actually approved. Their purpose was just to get some feedback from council that this was acceptable before they go to the expense of bringing Pad I forward. In terms of the temporary improvements, it kind of depends, I think, what your goal is. I think you're right. It's not going to be an accurate test of whether it's going to be able to accommodate the traffic that the additional development will generate. I mean, the traffic studies are designed to try to address that. But I think what it would do is be a test just in terms of how effective those particular proposals are. We can analyze how many people are people not turning left and turning around and going the other way. And as far as travel patterns, not the travel amounts, but travel patterns, we can kind of get some benefit from seeing if what we expected is working, and also public reaction. There's always concerns what the public reaction is going to be when we start putting stuff out, and kind of get a feel for if people think this might be a good thing, or if they call up and say, what in the heck are you guys doing?
who would pay for the temporary improvements?
That hasn't been clearly resolved. I'm not sure. We'd probably work with them and try to share the cost. I mean, we would probably provide the staffing and see if we can get them to provide the materials, I imagine.
Mr. Mayor, my two cents on the issue is that I'm not a real big believer in doing temporary solutions, and I know we move forward with looking at the comprehensive traffic improvements that were presented to us at the last meeting. One of the reasons is because we can't put all the improvements in. There's certain temporary things we can do and certain aspects of the proposal that can't be done without actual construction. And by doing so, we're only putting in a portion of the mitigation, in a sense. And that we don't know by doing a portion whether it may affect another portion negatively. And so that's one aspect. So I'm not a big fan of putting in the just a portion of this on a temporary basis. The second issue is that I think temporary barriers are not attractive. People are going to respond to the unattractiveness more so than the inconvenience at times, and wondering what the heck are we doing. And I think that to me doesn't serve us well. If we're making decisions, we want to know what the traffic counts are. I would go back to Council Member Guthrie's original statement: I'm not sure what we're going to find if we go forward. What are we trying to achieve? And what if we decide that, you know what, the numbers are there and they're not going to do anything? Do we go back to the drawing board? And so I think there's too many unknowns there, and maybe we should. I think that we've done, in this case, we've asked the applicant to bring forth a comprehensive approach to that particular center. They've done so. We still need to identify what those will be. Those will be brought back when an application is before us. And I think more study will happen. But in the meantime, I don't really believe personally that temporary barriers that are unattractive are going to serve our needs and actually give us any data that's going to be worth a grain of salt. So that's just my two cents.
Yeah, I would have to agree. we don't know without being able to put everything in. We just don't know whether or not the flows, the elements of that whole process, whether they're going to conflict or work in concert with one another. We just, we would have no idea. Okay, so the question is, coming back to Council Member Guthrie's request, does that come back to us for some modification?
No, I mean, that's the consensus. It was just informal direction given to us at that time, so I think we can just... If the only direction I'm getting tonight is we don't want to go forward with the temporary stuff, I think I can get that direction informally tonight.
Well, my question to you is, what happens if we want to add a feature to some of the recommendations that were made at the last council meeting? Would we have an opportunity to do that when a project was brought forward or the applicant came forward?
Yeah, this plan, once again, did not receive any kind of formal approval. It was kind of a go-ahead, this looks... this looks good, at least better than what you brought us before, and so move ahead with your application and have some comfort level that we're making progress here. And so it's by no means finalized or approved or anything.
Okay. All right. Are you okay with that? Any other discussion on this one? All right, that takes us to city manager items, item 14. Any this evening? Steve?
None, sir.
Council communication?
I have just one. I'd like to ask Steve if you could maybe have Mary contact us to set up a tour of the sanitation district plant. I would find that of value.
Okay.
I'd also request that the information that that Bill Wetkamp provided for us, maybe that information be
copied for because we only have one copy of this, to the rest of the council, so that we have something to look at when that item's continued.
Okay, I have one. This was given to me by Stephanie Wald from Salmon Enhancement. There's a, looks like a pretty interesting seminar on, it's entitled Moving Toward Sustainability, Advancing Low Impact Development, Smart Growth, and Integrated Regional Water Management on the Central Coast. It's a seminar. It's going to take place at the Embassy Suites. It's free. It looks like Friday, November 18th. And she only gave me two flyers here. Starts at 8:30 and it's over at 4:30. So it might be something that you would want to take some time to take a look at. There's an email address here from Regional Water Quality Control Board, and it looks like you might be able to register online. So I will leave that with the council. Maybe we can take a picture of that and throw it in everybody's box, since I only have two.
Definitely. Already wrote down the note.
Okay, any other council communication? Staff communication?
Yes, sir. I have a couple. First of all, I wanted to announce to the council, make you aware, on November 16th, from noon to 2 o'clock, the Visitors and Conference Bureau is going to be holding their bi-monthly sales forum luncheon here in Arroyo Grande at Klondike Pizza. And the Historical Society and the Village Improvement Association are working very closely with them to do the program. This brings in a number of tour companies, destination management people, hotel salespeople, a lot of people that are in the business of marketing certain areas to tourists. So this is the first time, I think, for quite a while they've had the meeting here. So the Historical Society, VIA, and, of course, the city are very interested in using this as an opportunity to put our best foot forward. So they're doing a lot of nice things. After the lunch, they're going to have an ice cream social with Doc Bernstein set up down at the Heritage Square to try to encourage people to go down and see their facilities. And the VIA is going to give some information on the village and the things we have to offer here. I think that they've extended an offer to the mayor to make a few comments in terms of things that the city's doing towards tourism. But they would very much, if you're available, would like all the council to attend if you're available. So please let Mary know if you can make that event.
Yeah, I just want to kind of put some emphasis on that. I had lunch with Jane Line from the Historical Society, and we were also, and I think Barbara Friel as well, that is working on this particular luncheon, I guess, with the BCB. And if you can at all make it, this audience, I think, is important to developing tourism and kind of putting our best foot forward as a destination location, particularly with a new hotel going in. We have some opportunities here. So I think their plan was to kind of, for the council members that do show up, you'll have an opportunity for some good pizza, and then they'll spread us out and so that we can sort of integrate with the audience and kind of sit with different groups. So good opportunity if you can make it. Anything else, Steve?
Yeah, I had one more item. I wanted to recognize our city clerk, Kelly Wetmore, who's come up with a new optimistic goal for us that also involves basically all the departments and all the department directors. We are. We've been talking some time about getting agenda reports on the website as well as the agendas, so we've decided to take that on. That will require us, there's a benefit to the council out of this, because to do that, we need to get our agenda packets and everything done Thursday so we can spend Friday getting the items on the website. So as a result of, we've modified our process, and a result of that, we're, our goal at this point, starting in the next agenda, is to get agenda packets to the council Thursday night instead of Friday night.
You're here.
Had a feeling you'd be okay with that.
Well, now that you have additional help, ought to make it a little easier. Okay. That takes us to item 17, community comments and suggestions. This is our final public comment period. Invitation to any member of the audience that would like to come forward and once again present any thoughts, suggestions.
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. I kept my mouth shut all day, so I had to stand up and say something. I can't. I wish there had been maybe more questions before the public comment period. Your comments sparked an interest about the in lots that are being developed. Maybe part of the ordinance could put set a lot size, specifically single-family residential, I think, is a 7,200-square-foot lot. So, which can't necessarily be subdivided into smaller pieces, although there would be potential for a granny unit, maybe. So any lot that would be in excess of that, or maybe some arbitrary number in that vicinity, would then fall under the situation that it might be able to be subdivided. A 10,000-foot lot might make two 5,000-foot lots. It's been done in certain areas. But that would create a safeguard for the trees and those larger lots that have potential for redevelopment, and stop trees from indiscriminately being cut down on those larger lots, and not hinder property rights of people who have existing lots that would not be redeveloped in any time in the future. I think the 12 inches is a great idea. Anybody with who's going to indiscriminately cut down an oak tree that's more than 12 inches ought to be stopped. So that would be, that was my basic comment, that maybe it could be policed that way by lot size rather than putting a restriction on everybody. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We're seeing no other public.
Mr. Mayor?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nancy Castle, AGP Video, and just to provide support for everybody, I want to remind people that there will be an presentation tomorrow about the Arroyo Grande Creek. I believe it's tied to the Zone 1-1A and the RCD, and it's about the flooding issue and funding issues, as I recall from the flyer. And then on Thursday, there is also a presentation about affordable housing issues, workforce housing issues being put on by the Housing Trust Fund. Tomorrow's event, Wednesday's event, is 6 to 9, and then Thursday's presentation is 4 to 6. And we will be taping both of those and putting them on your local Arroyo Grande channel and also on Channel 21. So. Thank you.
Thank you. How did I forget that? Yeah, it's a town hall meeting for Zone 1-1A tomorrow night.
What's the time again?
6 to 9. And here, in this council chambers.
Can I ask, particularly does Zone 1-A be replayed, or is it just going to be the one live show?
It will be. I think it will be replayed.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Anything else for the good of the cause? If not, the council still has two closed session items. We will adjourn.